Hello and welcome to the pilot episode of Keeping Pace with Cyberspace. I'm your host, Lucas Ashbaugh. Every week here, I'll be discussing an important current event relating to cyberspace and exploring how that impacts international affairs. To clarify, to listen to this podcast requires no technical background, as the main goal here is to frame all these technical events in the broader context of international affairs and to explain how that might affect us moving forward. Let's also make something else clear. There are currently a lot of podcasts out there that do news, a rundown of all the news for that week, or a technical exploration of a security or cyberspace event. This is neither of those. My aim here is to pick out an event or two each week and to really hunker down on the international, diplomatic, and security implications of that event. All right, so this week we'll be talking about the North Korean WannaCry ransomware. WannaCry virus was one of many big topics this year, and it went through two bouts of news and media attention. Here's what happened. In May 2017, the WannaCry ransomware was released. To explain very briefly, ransomware is a strain of malware that encrypts files, rendering computers and data useless. Until the ransom part kicks in, where the victim of this attack pays up. With the WannaCry ransomware specifically, the request was $300 paid through Bitcoin. Originally, when this attack hit, it spread like wildfire. It was on front pages of news and everywhere else you looked. People wouldn't stop talking about it. Then, all of a sudden, a security researcher found a quick solution. It kind of seemed to deflate a little bit. Everyone took a breath. But then, all of a sudden, this new revamped version of it was released into the wild again, and it kept spreading and spiraling. At the end of all of this, 250,000 computers, roughly, were affected. And this is over 150 countries. So this is a pretty big international deal. The kind of aftermath of this was that hospitals, schools, important businesses, everything across the spectrum was hit. On top of that, in trying to deal with this, a lot of these victims had actually paid up to these demands, even though the ransomware was not lifted. After all of these payments, which totaled $50,000, there wasn't really much to show for it. Some of those hardest hit were Russia, China, Brazil, the UK especially, Ukraine. There were many more across the globe that were also severely impacted. So this was the first bout of news, right? This is what was dominating the news for about 2 weeks to a month. Then you kind of don't hear anything about it. It subsides. People take care of it. And all of a sudden, on I think it was December 19th, a week or two back, Tom Bossert, the Homeland Security Advisor for the White House, gets up and he says, "We are officially attributing North Korea to this attack, along with the rest of the Five Eyes and Japan." And that's a big deal. Attribution is a really specifically hard task to do when it comes to some of these challenges. In what I've kind of just told you in that timeline, there's really a lot to mull over. So let's dig into it. The first thing here is that before there was this official White House attribution, along with all of these other Five Eyes in Japan, there was an attribution to the Lazarus Group. Now, the Lazarus Group is what is called a proxy actor. So for those of you that are into international affairs, you're probably used to this in kind of traditional kinetic conflicts. Those exist in cyberspace. And those are a lot more difficult because they're really hard to trace. As with most proxy groups, they're just used to give plausible deniability. So the Lazarus Group is a known proxy actor for North Korea. But this gets more interesting here, right? Because the WannaCry ransomware used a previous vulnerability. They used components from previous attack called Eternal Blue, which had been released by another proxy group called the Shadow Brokers. Now, the exact identity of the Shadow Brokers is still pretty unknown. A lot of people suspect Russia, other people suspect China, but they're obviously a very capable group. Now, the Shadow Brokers had stolen this Eternal Blue vulnerability from the Equation Group, which is the known proxy group for the NSA in the United States. So this is really interesting when you think about it, right? So it brings in this idea of blowback, right? And this is kind of a traditional deterrence consideration in the kinetic realm, but it's amplified in cyberspace. So if you're going to attack someone, you're going to expect a response. And can you handle that, right? So here specifically, the fear is that if you're going to release an attack, if you're going to attack someone, they can read the code and the vulnerabilities that were used in that attack. And assuming you're both using the same computers, they can hit you right back. And that's this idea of blowback, right? Traditionally, what we've seen, what research has shown, is that governments have actually been pretty hesitant to launch these really large attacks for fear, as it's hypothesized, of blowback. In this example here, right, so say that either China or Russia was behind this. They stole this vulnerability from the NSA and released it into the wild, right? Again, this is an assumption that it would be China and Russia, but if it was, that they released this vulnerability and let it into the cyberspace wild, it was then taken by someone else and used in a way that directly hurt Russia and China the most. That's definitely probably not what they had in mind if they were the ones that did this. Inversely, though, if we get to our next point here, the biggest takeaway from this whole thing is that there was no restraint. And this is really novel, okay? So this idea that this attack was built in such a way that it could spread across countries indiscriminately. It was targeted at all different countries, at all different types of business. That's really scary. There are really little to no examples in the analog kinetic world of just indiscriminate global attacks. I mean, maybe criminal bandits and theft and piracy, but even then, I don't think that really qualifies. CSI, any of those fun shows, they kind of portray a lot of these attacks as just kind of being thrown around the Wild West, people attacking everyone with no restraint. And with private citizens and criminal organizations, yeah, that might be true. But with governments, it definitely has not been so far. Usually we've just seen attacks constrained to regional rivalries or specifically focused at hegemons like the U.S. or between the U.S. and China. And I just want to reiterate that is really scary if we are suddenly moving to a new norm where everyone is just going to attack globally indiscriminately. We know that North Korea got 50,000 Bitcoin from this, okay? And the assumption here is that all of those payments were within 3 days of the initial release of this WannaCry ransomware. So at the time, Bitcoin value was $1,883 roughly. As of today, and this is after the spike, it's come down even a little bit, it's at $14,780. The value of Bitcoin over that time frame rose 685%. That means the new value of the original $50,000 that all of these people, these victims, had paid is now $34.25 million. That's crazy. Talk about a turnaround. Talk about a profit. What does that enable North Korea to do? Are they actually doing these attacks with the sole purpose of acquiring more money that they can't get in other ways? They've been suspected of being behind the Bangladesh bank heist, which stole millions and millions of dollars. Symantec has pointed at the Lazarus Group for that attack. And that's interesting because we haven't really seen governments employing cyber attacks and cyberspace as a way to get money that they can't get elsewhere. Maybe that's the future. Who knows? All right, let's back this up a little bit to a bigger spectrum. What are the takeaways here? When you are inevitably telling all of your friends how great my podcast is and why, even though they don't care about technology or are intimidated by it or it's just not for them, why they should come listen and why this affects them. As I mentioned earlier, the first thing here is indiscriminate attacks. Is that the new norm? You know, previously, the kind of the way that modern warfare has been going is being able to be much more targeted and precise and really understanding what you're doing. And this is the opposite. This is just, well, we made this, let's just throw it out there. That would be a really destabilizing norm to just having attacks and malicious activity sponsored and done by governments just thrown around. And that has real consequences, because when a government sees this destabilizing activity and starts joining in on it, it increases the chance of actual kinetic conflict and physical domain conflict, which we don't want to see. Let's also talk about proxy groups. That's another takeaway here. They are clearly destabilizing as well. They ruin any chance of attribution, which is good for the attacker if you're trying to be secretive. But if we're just doing away with attribution in modern day conflicts, it increases the chance of more aggressive behavior, falsely accusing states or knowing that a state did it, but really not being able to put your thumb on it in a way that you can disclose publicly. It's really not something that we want to see proliferate. There are already some international norms through the UN. They're voluntary norms, so people agree to them, but they're becoming widely popular that say, yeah, we're going to do away with proxy groups. Now, has that been implemented fully? I'm skeptical, but I do think it's a good start. On top of this, I mentioned this briefly, but I really want to bring this up. Especially in the UK, hospitals were targeted, and a lot of sick people or people that needed services were really hurt by that. Now, it is considered a war crime to attack medical facilities, right? You don't go after the Red Cross, you don't go after hospitals. That's not something you're supposed to do. Now, the NATO CCDCOE, their kind of Center of Excellence on Cybersecurity and Defense think tank there, has put out what they call the Tallinn Manual. And they specifically walk through a lot of what are the rules of engagement. And those only pertain during wartime. But if anything, that's more intense than not during wartime. And they're pretty strict about saying that the international group of experts that constructed that document, they say, yeah, you should not be going after hospitals and you should make an effort not to be so indiscriminate. You know, you can target, you can build these malicious tools in such a way that they stay away from important infrastructure like health systems. And a really interesting example that they bring up is if you are on a battlefield, so there's already some kinetic fighting going on as well, and you know that the enemy general has a Bluetooth-enabled pacemaker, is it okay to break into that using a wireless signal and disable that? So to, for lack of a better term, to hack into the pacemaker and render it useless, thus killing the enemy general. And there was some disagreement on that, but it really does show how some of these physical world examples get really murky here. A really big line that all experts say is that, well, we don't really know what a cyber attack is, but we reserve the right to call something a cyber attack when we decide it is one, right? So NATO does that, the US does that, a lot of other countries and governments, they exercise strategic ambiguity. And the one kind of agreed upon red line that everyone says that's gonna be an attack that warrants a real shooting response is when someone dies. And so when you have here targeting of medical facilities, you're getting really close. That's uncomfortable. But let's talk about kind of that infrastructure more in general. It also speaks to our entire nation, all countries around the world, are increasingly connected. It's this idea of critical infrastructure. Every government lists certain infrastructure that they deem absolutely crucial to everyday operations and to their society. Health systems and financial systems are usually up there, along with power and like electrical power and energy power, I should say, and governmental systems. This really highlights this idea of critical infrastructure vulnerability. There is really strong efforts right now trying to crack down on critical infrastructure and build the capacity to withstand these attacks better. So that's the end of the content of this initial pilot episode. I like to end each episode with what I call the Ashbaugh anecdote. I see a lot of other podcasts do something like this. I just drag in something that I think will be fun for me to talk about. Maybe you'll find interesting. Doesn't necessarily have to be related. This week, there's something that's really been kind of getting at me for a while. I read a lot of news and articles relating to this content. And something that I've started to realize is there's this one picture that keeps popping up. I don't remember the artist, but it's essentially, it's got kind of the Matrix style green binary ones and zeros flowing down the screen, and there's a silhouette of a hacker kind of sitting there at his computer being all intense. So I originally saw this picture. I wrote an op-ed on the WannaCry malware 8 months ago, maybe, and North Korea was just being whispered about as possibly being involved, and the article kind of talked about the implications if that were the case. And anyways, on the blog of that regional newspaper, they used that picture. And even at that time, I said, I know that picture somewhere. And so I went back and I found it on, I think it was a Reuters article. And then even doing more research to make sure I had the facts as well as possible for this specific podcast, you keep coming up over that picture. I just think it's funny. I don't know if it's open sourced or what, but it is the picture of the year when it comes to this specific content, is that binary silhouette hacker. It's pretty funny to me. Anyways, I want to wish everyone a happy new year. This will be not only my first podcast, but the last podcast of 2017. I look forward to moving forward with this podcast and your viewership. Thanks for taking the time to listen, and happy holidays.